Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Depth Chart Podcast. My name is Freddie Maggard. I'm joined, as always, by Nick Roush in Louisville. And Nick, we have a special guest today, former teammate of mine, longtime friend, Wes Jackson. Just a fascinating dude beyond football, and we'll get into that. Wes, thanks for joining us, man. It's good talking to you, my friend.
Well, Freddie, Nick, it's good to be here with you. I'm really looking forward to talking with you, buddy.
Nick, how about that voice, man? I mean, he's got it, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's it's like narrator for a I don't think it's movie trailer narrator, but it's definitely in the movie, you know, maybe even like a Christmas Carol, you know, maybe my brain's still stuck in that, but I can hear the narrator's voice now. It's professional, much more so than us.
Well, I mean, I learned less. I don't listen. I try not to not listen, but I do listen to our podcast sometimes. And I sound like freaking Kermit the Frog. And then Wes comes up with, sounds like a Broadway actor, man. So, Wes, good to have you on, brother. Let's just get a little bit into you, Wes. You own and operate Wes Jackson Homes now. Tell us a little bit about that, what you're doing these days in Louisville.
Well, sure, Freddie. You know, I've been fortunate to have a long career in media, primarily digital media. And I retired a few years ago and just decided I've got a 9-year-old son. And as I retired, a couple of things became pretty clear to me. One, I'm a bad retired person. I'm not very good at it. And number two, it's difficult to explain a retirement to a 9-year-old boy who you want to make sure they see what you do versus hear what you say. I looked around for a while and just decided I would do a complete sector hop, and went and got a real estate license, studied the industry for a while, and opened a company. It'll probably be about a year old here in a couple of months, and we had some starts and stops, but it's just an opportunity to help people in an industry where service matters, service to people matter. And you get to work directly with people, which is a lot of fun for me, on some of the biggest decisions in their life. And so that's what I'm doing now. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Can you see my cat in the background?
I can.
Can you believe that? Seriously.
Yeah.
This is where I am, Wes, at 53 years old. I have a cat, man. And I love this cat. I mean, this is my best friend here.
Well, you know, it's a good thing that you love cats, partner. With everything that you do, being a cat lover is pretty good.
I mean, this thing, Daisy's my cat, and she just sits here and looks outside and then watches me work. And I seriously, Wes, I mean, I'm like you. I have an 11-year-old daughter, and I'm retired from the rat race in Frankfurt and doing the media stuff. So we're kind of similar on that. And, you know, you ask my daughter what I do, and she'll say that her dad watches football on TV and talks about it. And she has no idea. So I work from home, basically. And this cat, there's days it's the only thing that I talk to other than work is my cat, man. There she goes again. So, yeah, I'm a cat man. Wes, you were the president at Courier Journal. Before that, you were in Dallas. Mm-hmm. You've always been a step ahead as far as big thinking. Nick, Wes was always the smartest guy in the room while we were at school. What do you think, man, about just the media? where it is now and where you see it going, because you were always a visionary of going to digital. Now you see this, the modernization of media and really just how, what Nick and I do as far as sports media. Where do you see it now and where do you see it going?
Well, a few things, you know, Freddie. It's, one, I don't read as much anymore about kind of future of media and all those things. Once I unplugged, I tried to fully disengage, and yeah. I had to do that. That's just the way my mind works on this. But I'll tell you a few things that are promising. You know, as you see, for instance, even the emergence of podcasts. One of the things that's doing is it's allowing people to get, when they're done correctly, deeper explorations of subject matter, whether that be sports, any type of analysis that would take place, but certainly in news and on news subjects, any of those things. And what it's doing is it gives the opportunity for really deep exploration versus what you can squeeze into a few column inches in a newspaper or a 3-minute segment on television. I think that's encouraging. Like most people, you know, what's difficult in media right now is really the pig pen that is social media commentation, comments, kind of what it causes people to do there. And I think there'll be a righting of that ship at some stage. I think people will become so fed up over time with all of the comment that's so negative, and will start to crave kind of credible sources again.
Yeah.
Start to look for credible sources and start to look for folks that are bringing truth to the table instead of fire and trying to kind of, you can only stroke people's anger for so long, you know, before that comes out. So I look forward to seeing how technology evolves from that standpoint in media and starts to affect, I think, the world in a little more positive way.
Well, you were the president of the Dallas paper in Texas. And then before you were the president of the Courier Journal, which had to be a thrill for you being a Louisville guy.
Yeah.
Nick, one thing that Wes did was bring Kyle Tucker to Louisville for the Courier Journal. That's something, Wes, I mean, that hire, like him, love him, indifferent. I happen to love Kyle.
Yeah.
That's changed a lot, and he's brought a lot to the Kentucky beat.
Well, a couple of things. First, I did not run the Dallas newspaper, the Dallas Morning News. I was with the company that owned the Dallas Morning News. I was the president of their digital company. That published the Dallas News website, their news, and a lot of the marketing solutions and those things that are there. And so that was run as an independent company within the framework of DLO. So, and we built that. It was a blast. It was a ton of fun to build that. So the first time really that I ran a newspaper was the Courier Journal. And it really started as I was consulting with a former board member on a company called Cars.com. It's Classified Ventures. And he asked me to come and help him with their digital transition. And part of what you started looking at, newspapers are just struggling. And, you know, you've got big changes that are taking place in that industry. It's called secular change, right? It's not coming back. And so making that transition was a big deal, but part of doing that was bringing in the kind of talent that understood how to engage people in social media, and Kyle was one of those. Kyle is a phenomenal writer. I thought he did an amazing job for the Courier Journal. He continues to do so with The Athletic right now. He's one of my favorite follows, and he's just, he's got an incredible way of telling stories. And
yeah.
I think people who follow Kyle, no matter what you like or don't like, right? And all you got to do is find anybody's social media feed and you find usually, you know, somebody who yeah. likes him and doesn't like him. I think Kyle's great. And I think he's good for the University of Kentucky athletics in that regard, because he digs in and tells some amazing stories like you, Freddie. I think what you're doing for football in the state of Kentucky is incredible. I think you're the analytics that you brought in, and you and Kyle kind of collaborated there for a little while. And I just think your storytelling has really blossomed in the last few years. And you're a terrific follow for most people who are looking for great analysis that gives you a perspective of football that most people don't have.
Nick, that's $100 advertising that I just paid for Wes. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Wes, that you mentioned just the how things have gone digital, and I, you know, we don't need to belabor the point anymore, but it was, you know, just the news the other day that the CJ is not going to print a Saturday edition anymore. Right. And for me, I was like, oh my gosh, what would have high school Nick have done if he couldn't go and cut out the story in the Correct. Paper? You know, but like, that's not how kids consume their news anymore. And, you know, I think also it says that, like, over the last few years, I mean, I pay for a digital subscription. I know a lot of people do. And I think there was some hesitancy, but the more you push digitally, like, I know Mandy McLaren did a big education kind of expose telling the how traditional schools and basically informing, you know, somebody who's lived in the city forever, how that system works. I had no idea, but the digital environment we're in, it kind of allows you to tell stories in a different way, to include audio, sound. Like, there's a lot of different ways to be able to tell a story now. And I think people are getting back on board. It's just that initial change, you know, it's hard to get us old heads to do something different.
Well, and that's gone for a long time. I built my first website in 1995 in Lexington, Kentucky, and opened a company there. And boy, you talk about trying to, you know, figure out, we called it the web one line at a time, right? So you'd hear a squeal when you logged in, and you'd watch web pages kind of tick down on a 14.4 modem from that standpoint. So I just was fascinated with where this could go for media and the trying to drive change in your life, but in organizations and anything else is hard to do. And you take newspaper companies, and the Courier Journal has roots that go back, now probably 190 years, somewhere in there, yeah. 186 years. And it's been basically the same business model that whole time, which has been a phenomenal business model. It just won't work anymore. And so you'll see newspapers across the country. They already have. They're going mm-hmm. to less days a week in publishing. And the smart ones are still really finding great journalists who can tell stories, and they tell those stories in podcasts, in multimedia forms online, in bits through social media. And what they do when they do that is they help create accountability in our societies. That's a big job. Journalism is in trouble in a lot of ways, but it's also just such an important part of the fabric of what we need in our communities. So, you know, that's heavy stuff, man. I'm here I want to talk football, but it's still a passion. If you can't tell, yeah. I believe in what media can do in communities and what it means, and especially small communities across you know, Kentucky, where that's even harder to find, you know, credible media sources or even your sports content. And that's where people like you guys are so important in terms of what you do.
Let's get to the football part. Wes, Nick West was a center at DuPont Manual, played in the state championship game, went to UK, much like Luke Fortner, played multiple positions on the offensive line, settled in at center, was a center for the Peach Bowl team in 93. Before we get to UK, Wes, we talked earlier that you were in Dallas for some years. What is the thought process of the Texas and Oklahoma fans of going to the SEC? Well, do they expect do they expect to come over here and do what they do in the Big 12?
You know, I will tell you, the first story I'll tell you is I showed up in Dallas in May. I got a note from the sports department, you know, at the Dallas Morning News, and they said, we understand you played football at the University of Kentucky. We want you to reserve this time. It was in August, and you're going to spend a day with us, and we're going to show you Texas. I was like, okay. And so we get a couple of, you know, sports guys to come out, and we start driving. We're in a car. They don't tell me where we're going. We start driving. It was about a four-hour drive, and we went from Dallas out to Permian. Familiar? Does that ring a bell? Right? Mm-hmm. Friday Night Lights, that whole deal. And we ended up around Odessa in about an hour and 45 minutes away from where we were headed. Everything was shut down to see at the ball game. Gas stations, everything, an hour and 45 minutes away from the scene. We pull in there, and this high school football had like 35,000, huge tailgate, you know, all the way around. The entire community was there for that ball game. And as we pulled up, it was an electrifying game. And just the crowd, the experience, everything else for high school. And the writer who's with me just said, you know, Wes, well, this is Texas.
Yeah.
And so I share that with you just to say that, oh yeah, Texas, Oklahoma, they believe they're going to succeed in the SEC. Their fans do. They'll be concerned. Texas has had a bit of a hard run compared to their standards. Oklahoma has been, you know, consistently terrific. And I think if you look at a recruiting base across Texas in that region, there's still, you know, there's an amazing load of talent all through that region that can supply those teams. Those are big brands. Those are consistent brands. Their fans will expect that they're winning in the Southeastern Conference.
What's funny to me is the Texas A&M hatred.
I experienced Freddie. Like I was actually scrolling through some old pictures last night, and I found some from my trip to College Station back in 2018. Mm. And Wes, that was the same weekend as the Red River rivalry. And I was just, you know, I think UK played at 3:30 that day. So I'm sitting at a, you know, a bar eating lunch, and that game's on. And you would have thought I was in there with a bunch of Oklahoma fans. No, they just hate Texas that much. They hate them to their core. It was crazy.
Yeah. Well, and Dallas was pretty interesting because Dallas is pretty close to Oklahoma.
To both.
It's kind of right there in that kind of equidistant. Most of the people in Dallas are kind of from different areas. So they used to tell me Dallas isn't really Texas. You have to go to Fort Worth before you meet a Texan. But you would watch the Red River rivalry there. And I went to one of those games while I was there. Oh, what an incredible experience. I mean, it was something else. I'm just telling you. And through Dallas, at least, any of the bars that you went to, you'd have Oklahoma bars, you'd have Texas bars, and then you'd have a few where they would mesh. And it was pretty hot. It's pretty hot.
Well, I can't wait for them to get in the SEC. I think it's going to bring a lot of, you know, we talked a lot about media in this podcast.
Yeah.
Bringing Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC is going to help our jobs, because there's the stories and the podcast are recording and writing themselves about those two coming over. Wes, I want to jump into the culture that Mark Stoops has built. And Adam Luckett, who's a tremendous writer for KSR and does the 11 Personnel podcast, came up with a word to describe the culture at Kentucky. And I keep forgetting the word. What is it, Nick?
Alignment. Alignment.
Program alignment. I need to write that down because it's really good. And one thing that I talk about on this podcast, and we have Andy Murray and Jay Dorch, Christian, we've had bunch of former players. Yeah, former players on this podcast. Is program alignment, and what Mark Stoops, Courtney Love, Susan Lax, and those folks have done at UK as far as former player interaction. And I don't know your take on it, Wes, but I think it's the best it's been since I left UK. Is former players, you know, we feel kind of welcome, wanted, appreciated at Kentucky now.
I think that's correct, you know, Freddie. And I'd speak to culture for a minute, just having built a number of businesses.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's an old adage that, you know, it's almost a cliche now that culture beats strategy. every time. Because culture is kind of that unspoken rule in an organization. And the things that people align to that may or may not be documented is what you really expect. And when you get that alignment of culture from players to administration, coaches, all of those things really pointing toward excellence, it overwhelms good strategy, sometimes even bad strategy. Right. It runs an organization. It's the hardest thing to get in an organization is to build that kind of culture, especially if you're trying to change it. And once you get it, it really drives success. So that is, to me, is the most impressive thing Mark Stoops has done at the University of Kentucky, in a football program that doesn't have, you know, a big history, to kind of change that culture that produces consistency of success. That's incredible. I think their engagement with former players is part of that overall culture build that he's put in. And I think it's a smart strategy for them. And I think to pull former players in to the organization, make them feel welcome, makes a difference for the organization. I think it makes a difference in their recruiting. Along the way. But it also, you know, if you think about that, it's extending respect out to a group of folks who, you know, aren't expecting it, quite frankly.
Right.
You know, I don't, the university doesn't owe me anything. But it just, it respects people and players from previous time. And I think that says something about who they are right now when they're able to kind of build on that and to bring players in to the fold. Former players. It's pretty cool.
Nick, I wrote that one down, culture beats strategy. Wes, I'm going to use that. Thank you, by the way.
I stole it from somebody else too. So that's recycled. That's recycled.
Part of the culture and personality of the Kentucky football program lies within its offensive line. Mm-hmm. John Schlarman started that. Mm-hmm. John was a teammate of yours for 1 year. Wes, talk a little bit about John Schlarman, the teammate, and then transition into what he did with that offensive line and what he means to that program still today.
Yeah, a couple of things. You know, so we overlapped for a year. So John, I think, was redshirted the year. It was my senior year when we went to the Peach Bowl. But I think things that I would tell you I remember about as he came into the fold. One, you could tell how tough he was.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of a makeup that some people have that has not toughness, you know, I'm trying to fight you in practice, anything else, just a resolve to get better. And he focused on small things, right? And, you know, you could just watch him work on detail while as a freshman. Coming in, I think that is probably unusual. I haven't coached a lot of college, you know, level football, but the kind of focus was there. So you could, you know, some people are just different. You can, and you've seen it in your life when you run in, and John had that something that was just a little different, and it played out, of course, while I wasn't in his career at the University of Kentucky. What was really interesting is what he was doing with young men as a coach at the University of Kentucky. And what he started there with the Big Blue Wall, very few linemen that have played at the University of Kentucky could tell you they're not proud of that. And if they do, it'd be hard pressed. It's just really good to see the focus on big guys, but more importantly, the kind of football they play and the foundation that he laid for what they would do. And that was not an easy build for him. I'll tell you, I remember talking with him when he first got there, and he was like, you know, Wes, I don't know if we got a guy who can bench press over 400 pounds.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that says a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he built that offensive line to, you know, like you said, appreciate the big guys, right? I mean, how many offensive lines across college football has a nickname, has a website, is now is producing pros, Darren Kennard, two-time All-American, and is in the conversation, Wes, is the best offensive lineman to play at Kentucky when you're a consensus All-American. I mean, he's in that discussion. So
Luke Fortner's an incredible player. He really is. Yeah. And belongs in that discussion.
Yeah. And then Luke Fortner is one of my all-time favorite players. Yeah, he's nasty. I know you can appreciate. Yeah. You can appreciate him playing guard and then landing at center. Yeah. I thought he did a tremendous job, has a future in the NFL. Yeah. And he reminds me a lot of you because when Luke walks in the room, he doesn't try to be, but he's the smartest guy in the room, mm-hmm. you know, with an engineering degree, a master's in engineering, an MBA. I mean, the kid is sharp, but he's a pro, right? I mean, he is a pro. Nick, Dare Rosenthal came out yesterday and announced his intentions to enter the draft. So now Kentucky's going to have to replace two starting tackles and the center. Mm-hmm. Nick, how do you see that playing out? Does Kentucky have a tackle right now in the fold or two tackles now that could step into that starting role? What's your breakdown of this Kentucky offense for 2022 without Dare Rosenthal?
See, and it's tough enough replacing a consensus All-American. When you got to replace two offensive tackles, that's when things get tricky. And it's not like Kentucky hasn't recruited well at that position. There's a lot of four-star talent there. But, I mean, Lane and Young got drafted last year. Darian Kennard is going to get drafted this year. Dare Rosenthal, he's going to be picked at some point this year. Like, you've had talent there, so you aren't going to sit those guys on the sideline to get those other guys experience. So it's going to be a young group. I thought – ideally you could convince Dare, listen, buddy, come back and, you know, maybe be a day one pick. But he was content. He was ready to move on. And in that scenario, like I like Eli Cox as a similar to Fortner, where he's going to kind of rise through. He can do a little bit of everything. He can play that center role. There might be an adjustment period, but I'm confident he can do that. And even though he gave up, you know, a speed rush on that first, or, you know, one of those early dropbacks in the Citrus Bowl, I think Kenneth Horsey can be a solid offensive tackle. The question is now, these young guys that you've recruited well, how well can you groom them over the next 9 months to be ready for that other tackle spot? One of them just arrived on campus, Keontae Goodwin. Keontae Goodwin is going to get a ton of talk like he always has, but he also doesn't have a ton of experience. And not just he just hasn't played a lot of football. He's great in the weight room. He's an exceptional athlete, but he hasn't seen a lot of twists and stunts and blitzes. Like, they're going to be throwing a lot at him. So ideally you have somebody else that can be a placeholder and he can be that third guy. Now, one of those placeholders, it could be Jeremy Flax. He did not perform well last year, former four-star JUCO offensive tackle, but they really liked what happened in the spring. Something clicked in the spring. And then that light bulb got unscrewed during the summer and just things went awry. So maybe you get from there. Maybe you get from DeAndre Buford. But I also think ultimately what's going to happen is that Kentucky's going to get they're going to go to the portal to get an offensive tackle. This is going to be a taller task, a more difficult one to find. But I think in an ideal situation, those young guys that need the reps in spring ball can get them. And then when you get another wave of transfers following spring practice, when guys at other programs who think they're going to be starters, they compete. They find out they're second on the depth chart at a place like a Georgia or a Clemson, or, you know, you name one of those schools that's riddled with five-star prospects. There's going to be some of those guys in there that are talented, that are like, all right, I'm not going to stick this anymore. I'm going to play. And Kentucky could be that home. So that's my kind of ideal scenario, but it is weird though, Freddie, that for the first time in a long time, we're entering a season where the greatest strength now is kind of the biggest question mark at offensive tackle.
Yeah, I mean, question mark being the unknown. We don't know who's going to be there. Mm-hmm. But I do think that culture will prevail. You know, and Mark Stoops to this point, I mean, has more than earned the trust that we should put in him. That he's going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. as far as getting five guys out there that are going to uphold the standards of what the Big Blue Wall stands for. Wes, a player I like a lot, redshirted this year, is guard Jagger Burton out of Frederick Douglass. How hard is it for an offensive lineman to come in? You know, we're talking about Keontae Goodwin also. He's a tackle. you are an inside guy, but he's a tackle. How hard is it for a high school player to come in and play year one or year two in the Southeastern Conference on the offensive line?
I just have to tell you, the speed of the game is so different. And, you know, there's a speed jump from any high school player that's moving into any college program, and you're going to run into the SEC, and you're typically at tackle facing one of the best athletes on the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And so, especially Southeastern Conference. So you got a guy out there that's a 4'5", 4'6" guy that's 250 to 280, you know, somewhere in there, a great athlete, and is unbelievably fast. And then with the complexity of the defense and twists and all those things, that's a big, big ask, especially at tackle, where you are on an island, out there. And actually my first start at the University of Kentucky was at tackle. A guy named Chuck Bradley went down, he was hurt, and I had to go out against LSU and play tackle. And you know, after playing guard, I got to tell you, you feel naked out there. I mean, you're all alone. It's nothing like being inside at guard, or center. That is a completely different offensive line position when you move out there. So I think it takes a special talent. It would be unbelievably hard to come in and start and be consistently good as a true freshman, because, you know, both the skills that you want to develop, adjustment to the speed, but also starting to understand from twists to different types of defenses that you're going to see, and be able to apply that so you're not thinking while you're playing. You're able to be fast mentally. That's a big ask right there. So I think the transfer portal has been good, even to the offensive line, as you see Darryl Rosenthal come in and some of those things. But I think for fans who would put a lot of expectation, for instance, on Keontae, who's coming in, who, you know, great tools, all those other things, that's a very no matter how big and strong and fast that kid is, that's a tough ask, for them to come and do that.
And to put it simply, Wes, the only two true freshmen I can remember even getting significant reps, they're both NFL players, and two of the greatest ever to it at Kentucky, Landon Young and Darian Kennard. Like, Kennard, consensus All-American, played some as a true freshman, never started. And then Landon, he got thrown into it because of an injury as well. And I still remember that first rep he had at Florida when Cole Mosier went down. Whew, man, there was some learning there. There was some learning in that damn game.
But I think, you know, if you go back to that culture piece, you know, what they're building, when they bring people in, like Dare came in to that kind of culture, and I think he became a better player than even what we saw at LSU, from him. And a big part of that is coaching and culture, but it's the leadership in that line. So I think guys are going to step up in there and meet the expectation of the culture of that offensive line and the big blue wall. Who that will be, I think spring ball is going to be really critical for the offensive line this year in terms of the experience they get and to see who can emerge and really step forward there.
Well, why is it? I mean, obviously, you know, you're one-on-one a lot at tackle, especially at left tackle, because offenses are heavy right-handed. You have a tight end there that can help you out. But talk us through the difficulty. I've always heard, I never did play offensive line, even though I was always built like an offensive lineman.
That's what I loved about you as a quarterback, buddy.
I had that mentality. But explain to us why is it that much different? And I've always heard the further you get away from the ball, center on out, why is it more difficult to go out than it is to play on the interior?
Well,
especially early in your career.
Well, early in your career, everything is just moving faster than you've ever seen it before. So let's just kind of put that out there. I think you're going to see things early in your career that you've never seen before, even no matter how much you've practiced or you haven't seen enough. So you haven't just had enough even mental reps of different types of defenses you see. But if you think about it, if you're playing center and guard, everything is more compact around you. So even if you get off a little bit on just pass protection, you might, you got a smaller, it's almost like a little phone booth, right? You know, yeah. that it's a smaller window. So a center might be able to bump, you know, a little bit. So it forgives you a little forgiveness sometimes on a mistake because it's tighter the closer in you get to the ball. That creates different challenges, right? You know, for what you're doing. So you get out there to tackle, it is, you think about it, you've got, you know, let's just say you got a two yard to, you know, 3 yard split, you know, if you're going to real, and then you're out there with that great athlete who's a better athlete than you. That no matter how good an athlete you are as a tackle, that's a better athlete usually that's lined up, especially left tackle on that side. And you have to run backwards, right, to set, to get into a position to block an incredible athlete that can go inside of you and there is no help, maybe run outside of you and there is no help, and you got to get your hands on them without holding them and protect that. And they've got a two-way go. They can come inside, they can come outside with any number of moves, and if you mess up, there's nobody that's going to kind of help chip that guy or, you know, kind of pick you up from that standpoint. So that's a lonely spot out there at tackle when especially, you know, if it's third and plenty and everybody knows you're going to throw the ball and you got to get that dude blocked. And they've got a whole bunch of moves they're working on to go destroy a quarterback and get you down there. And if you're a freshman, and you haven't seen those moves, and you've got that lonely island out there with the speed of the game. Wow, man. Respect to freshmen who get quality reps in any conference, but certainly in the Southeastern Conference, playing tackle from that side. And it also tells you what a luxury it is to have folks like Darian Kennard and that kind of athlete and talent that's out there. That's a luxury.
You mentioned Chuck Bradley earlier, you know, and the difficulty as a freshman. He played as a freshman.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, you know, Wes, I'll be honest with you. There's a lot of stuff I don't remember about college, but as stories are told, I don't know the difference. Is that a story or is that the truth, right?
Yeah, right.
The one truth I remember when Chuck was a freshman, he was out on the island and got beat. And right before I got ear holed, I can remember, watch out, Curtis, you know, something like that, because Chuck called everybody Curtis.
Yeah.
And he got drilled. I can distinctly remember him saying, watch out, Curtis. Then I got hammered by somebody. So
watch out, Curtis.
Yeah. Watch out, Curtis. Bam.
Clock, 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 time.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wandell Robinson, Nick. Man, you know, announced he's going pro, which is good for him. Mm-hmm. And I hope nothing but the best. and you're a lot younger than Wes, than me and Wes. Is that the most dynamic year of receiver in your lifetime that you've seen play at Kentucky?
It's certainly the most dominant from a – you knew when he that he was going to be the best athlete on the field no matter what. And even though they didn't always result in big play touchdowns, I'm sure his teammates gave him a lot of guff for getting tackled inside the five. I can think of, three or four off the top of my head. But it's the most dominant season by a receiver in UK history. And when you look at the record books, a lot of that stuff, it's air raid, back when people didn't know how to defend anything. And that's not to discredit, James Whalen or Craig East. They're great players, but they benefited from the times that, and they also benefited from having outstanding quarterbacks. Will Levis was a good quarterback, but he's in his first year as a starter. And he was able to create a connection with Robinson, who, yes, Josh Ali was there. They had some quality help from the tight ends. They really spread the wealth there, but particularly in the Citrus Bowl, when you had, he was the guy that they were going to go to on that final drive, and Kentucky just kept going to him and they couldn't stop it. He had 86 yards on that final possession, 86 of the 89 UK had to gain, or whatever it was. I my numbers might be a little bit off, but he had all but the last carry that Rodriguez had. And I think that what's really going to make his legacy lasting and memorable. Like, we remember Randall Cobb for his ability to do so much. And in a similar vein, like, you remember Lynn Bowden, the playmaker. Like, when Kentucky needed a big play, he was going to run for a 45-yard touchdown at quarterback, or previously he was going to return a punt for a touchdown. He did in the Citrus Bowl. He did in that game against Missouri when all hope appeared to be lost. Wandell was just a great receiver who is a little guy. They didn't play like a little guy. He played like a big guy. That touchdown he had against LSU, he was completely stretched out in the end zone, diving for a catch, playing above his height. That third down catch, he got just destroyed. And then every single time he'd be down on the ground, he'd catch his breath, and then he would hop back up. He'd jump like 3 feet into the air and get the whole crowd fired up. That resiliency, that toughness, the ability to play out of his size. I wrote like a post in October about records to be broken. I never in 1,000 years would it, like, I was just like, no way he catches receiving yards record. It's just, it's unobtainable. And what does he do? He goes and does it in the most dramatic way possible. He is without a doubt, we've seen some great receivers. I know there's a running joke, like Stevie Johnson is great. Emmanuel guy, Keenan Burton was great, but none of them could dominate a game as a receiver quite like Wandell Robinson.
Yeah, I agree. And Wes, one of my all-time favorite players. Kentucky's had a long history of running backs, right? I mean, I'm older than Wes, Nick, and we had, Mark Higgs, Mark Logan,
Ivy Joe,
Andy Murray, Ivy Joe Hunter, Alfred Rawls, Al Baker, and we had a bunch of pros. But, Wes, I really, really like Chris Rodriguez Jr. I love the way he runs. I like his mentality. He did have fumble issues. But as an offensive lineman, Wes, how good must it feel to have Rodriguez back there running the football, and knowing that you only have to create just a small gap for him to get through? And then if you don't get through your block, he's going to put his helmet in the back of your shoulder pads.
That's the truth. We had a guy that came in. We had some good running backs even while I was there. So I crossed over with Alfred Rawls. But our Peach Bowl year, the true freshman that came in, Mo Williams. You remember? Mm-hmm. And there's a difference. And C-Rod is this much different than Mo as a running back. But there's a certain kind of vision that only a few have, and he just has that knack to get positive yards, and that, man, that covers mistakes for offensive linemen. And knowing you don't have to be absolutely perfect in order to get that allows you to play as a lineman more aggressive, even more aggressive, and do that. And man, C-Rod, just that, first of all, what big news that he's coming back.
Yeah,
I mean that is a big big news item for that football team. Well, and number two, he is going, he's going to have a great year. If you get that line, you know, just serviceable, if it gets back up to Big Blue Wall standards after all the changes that we've talked about, could be another phenomenal year.
And to your point, Wes, earlier about culture, yeah. I'm not like, I think worst case scenario, Kentucky's going to find a mauler that can help him run the football next year. I'm more concerned about getting those guys on an island and pass sets and pass rush. That's where it does take a lot of talent and kind of next level abilities. But that culture, they're going to be able to run the damn ball. That's if all else does not go according to plan, if your pass pro struggles and those young talented receivers don't make the jumps that you want, no matter what, you're going to be able to fall back on the running game with Chris Rodriguez in 2022.
Yeah. I'd point to the touchdown that won the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, for C-Rod, which is just to me exactly what that guy represents. He was hit in the backfield. They had arms around his hips, right? If you remember that play, what was he, 5 yards deep in the backfield? Yeah. And somehow shook that off, scored a touchdown, and ran right over one of his own players to get in the end zone, right? Right? He slid into the end zone on top of one of his own guys because, you know, train has tracks, right? And it runs over whatever's in the way. And I just thought that was a really good example of, you know, the kind of running back. He just doesn't make negative yard plays.
Yeah.
And that he gets forward momentum in so many different ways. And what a real talent to have that coming back.
I did the math, Freddie, and his tackles for loss, basically, if you give Chris Rodriguez the ball, there's a 97% chance he's not going to get tackled behind the line of scrimmage. It's insane. It's insane.
Yeah. And you know, I want to be perfectly clear about the Kentucky offensive line.
Yeah.
I am not concerned. The word concern is not in my train of thought. Mm-hmm. I think the best description that I could have about my view of the Kentucky offensive line for 2022 and all the personnel changes is I'm interested. Big difference of concern and interested. I'm interested to see how Coach Wolf fills those roles and develops those young guys, because the culture's there. There's an expectation. So, Nick, I agree with you. No matter who's in there, they're going to be able to run the daggone football.
Well, this is where culture beats. This is where culture really matters, you know, from that side. So they've got talented guys, you know, that are there that are going to step up and they're going to emerge, that'll come out of there. But I even remember Horsey had to move out to tackle, and there are a few plays. So that guy is a terrific run blocker, and he was great out there. But that island that Nick that we were talking about, that comes out there, that was a different game for him as he moved from guard to tackle, and he moved from the phone booth, fighting in a phone booth, to fighting, out on the plains, with not much around him.
A lot harder to get your hands on somebody.
Right. You can see that adjustment. Now he's got all the tools to do that.
Yeah. He's got nine months to get ready for it too.
And he's got time to do it. I think he's got the skills and equipment, to do it. I think he's got the mental makeup to do all those things. So to me, that's going to be a fun story to watch through spring to see what will emerge on this line, and to see this culture at work, really bringing that next crop of linemen forward, for the Big Blue Wall. So, I agree with you, Freddie. It's you could be concerned if you want to, but it's really going to be one of the more exciting stories to watch if you're really into football, right? And you're in there and you care about big old nasty guys that put their hand down in the dirt and, they get a little snot, running out of there and they're stinky and sweaty during the game.
That was the Bill Curry coming out in West. Nick hates Louisville. I'm just gonna get that out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you're a UK guy.
I am.
However, Nick, Wes lives in a divided house.
I do.
Julie I do as well. Is a U of L fan. Yeah.
Now, listen, my wife is a big U of L fan.
Oh, okay.
Talk us through this tough. Year's Governor's Cup. How did you watch? Did you watch at home? Do you two not talk the day of the game? Is there anger afterwards?
So we have an uneasy peace, right? You know, an uneasy peace that for football, right? Since I played football, so there is no peace during basketball season, right? I mean, there is no peace. But for football, the uneasy peace is that we don't watch a game together, but I don't hear her. She doesn't talk smack at all. Of course, she hadn't had a whole lot of reasons to, lately on the football. So I don't have to hear that as much during football. And I'll just tell you, you know, one of my first dates, it was I took her to a UK Auburn game, and Cam Newton won on the last play. Remember, Auburn was number one down there. Yeah. And so I'm sitting up there with former players, you know, with my wife, and she turns around. And she found the one lonely Auburn fan somewhere in there. She's got a U of L shirt on because I wouldn't take her to the game in Auburn colors on that one. And she's high-fiving this guy. So I thought, you know, she's going to have to walk back to Louisville. and then I looked at it. I was like, anybody who's got that kind of sand, right, you know, then probably I want to hang around with her a little bit more. She's pretty tough in her own right. But yeah, so it's tough, man. And Nick, if you got a divided house, I don't know how you work it out, but we don't watch basketball games at all together. And we can enter the room during a football game, mm-hmm. and it's okay. That's the uneasy piece that we've arrived at. And it's mainly her, because, you know, for me, I you know, for the city of Louisville and everything else, I want the University of Louisville to do well, just not better than Kentucky. from that standpoint, because I think it's important for the state, and I think it's important there. Now, as a fan, I just want Kentucky to beat them in every game they play.
Well, yeah, and it's more fun when they think they can win too. Like in football, they thought they could win going to that game. It was hilarious. It was so funny. Right. And then to just have them get their souls ripped out, it's even more fun. Luckily, my wife is not the – like she was raised in Ohio, so she just went to U of L. So, like, I got to deal with more Ohio State Buckeyes bullcrap than anything.
Right.
But, no, it's man – It almost makes me sad too, seeing only like 5,000 people at their basketball game, watching them getting smacked down by ACC team.
It's a tough time right now. If you're a Louisville fan, it's pretty tough.
And, not a whole lot. Don't have a president. Right. Don't have an AD.
Right.
You're going to get new coaches.
There's not a whole lot of rays of hope, you know, right now. And you know, the NCAA stuff, which I think the NCAA is. Imagine it were Kentucky sitting that long on waiting on an answer, right? How incensed would you be with the NCAA that they just sat there and quietly undermined your program for that long with no answers? That for any program is just, I think the NCAA is just absolutely cheated a number.
It's devastating them.
I want them to do. I want them to be better. You know, just not better than Kentucky.
Yeah.
Last football topic, then we'll get you out of here, Wes. I know you gotta head out. Kentucky's getting in return of DeAndre Square, Jacquez Jones, Jordan Wright to go along with J.J. Weaver out of Louisville there, Wes, and Trevon Wallace, who I think has a tremendous future. I just named you five linebackers that can absolutely fly. That is huge for the Kentucky defense to get five experienced linebackers back for 2022 and looks to be a position of strength for that defense next season.
Well, you know, you guys are looking at this in way more detail and more frequently than I am, but it's another statement on the program. That kind of speed.
Yeah,
with depth at linebacker is just evidence, further evidence of how different the football program is than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah,
from that standpoint, so that's a huge deal there. And I'll tell you the other big thing that, you know, it's I hate to kind of keep coming up front, but the defensive line is also that's a huge difference maker. And that's one of the key differences, even when you look at national championship teams in the BCS series. Southeastern Conference is bringing in defensive linemen and linebackers that are different, right, in mass. And having that speed at Kentucky with that kind of depth at linebacker, that's another big one. So if they solve the cornerback, right, internally, the cornerback, replacements and what they need to do there, I think you could be looking at another, world-class defense.
Nick, the speed difference in the upper level SEC bowl games where, when it mattered, teams really, wanted to be there and all that. But Kentucky, Iowa, Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, Cincinnati, and then that display, the defensive display that Georgia and Alabama put on in the championship game, Nick, it is just different, especially at the defensive line, because, many times this year on this podcast and I wrote about it, I felt that the backup defensive linemen were much faster than the starters for Kentucky. I look at Trayvon Ripka, they had a big play in the Citrus Bowl. But back-to-back years, Anwar Stewart, who you know as well, defensive line coach, is going to have two players drafted. Quentin Bohanna, Phil Hoskins last year, this year, Bully McCall, Josh Pascal, and then you just replace those guys with players that you developed on that defensive line. But, Nick, the speed is just different, right?
It is, and that's what's – I mean, if there was one drawn line in the sand – difference between Ural's era and this one, stylistically, it's the speed of the game. I mean, of course schemes are obviously going to be different, but just, it was all about having shoulder pads up to you halfway up your helmet back in the day. Guys, it's all based on athletes. How good of an athlete are you? How well you are to operate in space, because you have to adjust to the way that offenses are playing in space. And to see guys be able to cover ground downfield and make plays downfield. And you know what? That's what I noticed with offensive linemen too, just watching that All-American Bowl, Antonio Hall's son, Nick Hall, who signed with the Cats, watching him move in open space on screens. These guys are a different breed of athlete nowadays. It's not just like, all right, you're the fat guy, you got to play on the line. Like, no, you're a good athlete if you're playing up there.
Hey, listen, that last statement, there's not one single offensive lineman on Kentucky's team that is not a great athlete.
Right? Yeah.
And I'm just telling you, and when you say there's a better athlete, out on the wing, that's a true statement most of the time. But these are unbelievably athletic big people, that are coming in there. And it's just so hard to find. You can find size, but to find size with athleticism, then find size, athleticism, and a willingness to do the kind of work required to become great at really any position, but certainly offensive line. I'll tell you, I was not a Mark Stoops fan in his first couple of years. I thought they looked poorly coached to me. And boy, was I wrong. I mean, that guy has just – it's got to be one of the biggest program turns in the country.
Yeah.
It's hard to find a list of bigger turns of a program, and especially to do that in the Southeastern Conference with the talent levels that we're talking about. Can you name? I'm just trying to think through, is there a bigger turn story of a program anywhere in the country?
He's got a 600 winning percentage since 2016, which, at a place like Kentucky that doesn't typically have 60%. Well, I mean, it's remarkable. And now it's just a matter of getting people to recognize it. But I kind of like that people still Stoops thrives as that underdog, and that's, the culture piece, it really kind of has taken on the persona of its head coach.
Yeah, and I think he was a young head coach that once he identified some coordinators that fit him, was an extension of him, which I think he has now. You know, it really took off. But I can't think of a bigger turnaround for a program right now. I mean, there's an argument to be made that Mark Stoops is a top 10 coach in the country. And there's a lot of people making that argument, which I like to see because, you know, I love the guy. I think he's fantastic. And what he's done, he soon passed Bear Bryant as the program's all-time winner. That's incredible. And we're seeing that every aspect of the program. Well, Wes, thank you so much, man, for coming on. We ran 1 minute over. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, well, Freddie, it's great to see you. Nick, man, really good to meet you, buddy. I love what you guys do. Thanks for having me on. And, you know, keep it up. Call me anytime. I'd love to talk with you some more, buddy.
Thanks, man. Nick, appreciate it, man. I hope everybody enjoyed the podcast. You can like us, subscribe to us, and all the technical stuff that Wes and Nick know that I have no clue what that means. But, you know, Wes, I'm terrible, man. I can do a Word document, and I can send an email, and I can get on the KSR website. That's about the extent of my tech skills, bro.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
You get the fundamentals, buddy.
Yeah, Drew Franklin had to teach me how to download music, so just put it that way. Hey, Wes, I hate to keep you longer, but man, when Kentucky, who'd they play, Nick, that was on the on the computer, not on TV?
Chattanooga.
Yeah, Wes, that was a chore, man.
Oh,
to figure out how to, for me, I mean, it was a nightmare. Nightmare.
But guys, come on. You could come on up to Louisville, buddy. You know, I give you a little tutorial program, and you know, make it all better for you.
I want to go to the lake house.
The lake house is always open to you, man. I had Parks and some of those guys down a little not too long ago, and I'd love to. I'd bring the family out. We'll get out on the water, do a little water skiing this summer. At worst, we'll just sit out on the deck in a hammock and tell some lies.
Did those dudes take their shirt off is the question that I had.
Hey man, you know, I'm a big dude. I am what I am. I take my shirt off because it's hot, you know. And I'm even getting replacement parts now, right? I just had knee replacement on this one. I don't care. I'm gonna have scars, I'm gonna have a belly hanging out at the lake. You can't avoid it. What are we gonna do? Somebody gonna say something? Yeah, I don't care.
Well, guys, thanks so much, man. It was a lot of fun. Y'all have a great day. And right. West Jackson Homes if you're in Louisville. Thanks, guys. That's it.